Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And most of you listening know that I am currently in the midst of the Bermuda Triangle down here on the island of Puerto Rico. And since I have been broadcasting from down here, we're going to do something for the first time, and that is bring a guest in. And technically, all this should work out very well. It's going to be even more interesting because the guest that we're going to bring in is also out there in the middle of nowhere. You may recall around 3 months ago, we talked to a 35-year-old man named Colin Lee, who decided to realize a lifelong dream of hiking the entire Appalachian Trail, all the way from Georgia to Maine. That's 2,200 miles on foot. He estimated it would take around 6 months, and so at this point, he's more or less on schedule right in the middle of his trip. And, you know, we talked to him the very first night he left, and so now we are going to touch base with him again and see what he is like now, 3 months later, out there in the midst of the wild and, of course, up against some of the most daring weather conditions we've probably seen on the East Coast of the United States in years. So, Colin Lee, welcome back to Speaking of Strange. How are you, buddy?
I am doing great, man. I am happier than I could ever be.
Happy
How are
to be
you
alive.
Doing in Puerto Rico, huh?
Yeah, that's
your
right.
Triangle? That's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm having my own little adventure down here chasing flying saucers around. So Colin, now where are you at tonight?
I currently, as far as trail miles, I'm at 998.6. So I'm about about a mile and a half from the 1,000-mile mark, which is that's a pretty big accomplishment for this point.
Oh, yeah.
But currently, I'm actually in Washington, close to Washington D.C. Given July 4th coming up, I have a buddy of mine I haven't seen. He was my freshman year in a high school, 1992 locker roommate. So he worked for the government here. He came pick me up just short of Harper's Ferry, Virginia.
Oh man,
halfway
what
mark for the entire trip. So,
yeah.
So far, and so good.
And Harper's Ferry is just a beautiful, enchanting, quaint little town. So I love going there and exploring the history of the place.
Yeah, I haven't been. I'm actually looking forward to getting there when I get back on the trail. I'm going to do the 4th of July here in Washington, get back on the trail, hopefully on the 5th. And I'll be in Harper's Ferry that afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that. It's kind of the halfway mark is a big section, big spot to be at.
So now, when we talked to you your first night on the trail, you were pretty gung ho. And how do you feel 3 months later?
There's days that you're completely down. I had a moment where I really contemplated, is this something I want to continue doing? The body's worked out and just so tired. And some days you know, I think when I get lonely out there, so if you hike with yourself. And not a group for too long, you can really kind of get lonely. You got to keep your mind busy. But my spirits are up. I've actually had the opportunity to play 12 disc golf courses. I got off the trail in certain areas and hitched into towns that could be, you know, maybe 10 miles away to play disc golf. And then we hitched back to the trail and continue north. So, but spirits are up. There's a lot of people who dropped off already. Injuries. There's been a couple deaths on the trail this year as well. It's definitely life changing. It pushes it to your limits and, you know, physically and mentally. And just, you know, you gotta just be safe out there, but it's, continually challenging and beautiful every day.
So what has the weather been like most of the time?
it's actually kind of similar to Asheville. I mean, you can go there and, you know, the mountain ranges, it's 40% chance of rain. Basically year round. You know, I consider Nashville. It's been the same way on the trip. It's you know, there's been a lot of storms that's come in, but in general, it's, I'd say, 50-50 out of the, you know, 90 days. I've been hiking for 90 days, or 89, because I got off yesterday, but 89 days, and I'd say half of them, rain. I had an ice storm out of Gooch Mountain shelter. That after that night you talked to me that morning, huge ice storm, 30-mile-an-hour gust, wind, and I went over Blood Mountain, and I've been in a situation, I've never been in a situation that that intense, you know, climatically.
And so now, how has your equipment stood up? Have you shipped anything back, or have you kept all
of
it set up?
Yeah, you dumped a little weight here and there. You kind of got to, you know, it's a continuous process to refine what you actually need out there. And, you know, every week or so when you really take this, you know, time to stop and wash everything up and get everything clean and back in order, you're like, you know what, I really don't use this much. Or, you know, you got 50 feet of rope and you only need 25. And you can, you know, you can dump a quarter pound in rope, and, you know, there's no point carrying 500, you know, Advils. You know, you do 250, and I mean, you just, you get your weight down. But, you know, at the same time, my pack's right now about a 30, full food for 4 days is about 34 pounds. You know, 1 day of food, I'm riding like 28, 29 pound pack, which is pretty good. But there's guys out there carrying 50 pound packs, and, I feel like they're bigger men than me. I walked a mile in one guy's shoe. His name is Doc, and, he had a 47-pound pack, and I'll tell you, out of the almost 1,000 miles I've done, that was the hardest mile I've ever done with this guy's 47-pound pack. And he carried mine, and, you know, this old guy's just skipping down the trail. But unfortunately, Doc's actually off the trail. He got injured, rolled his ankle or something like that. But
so now, I've heard about this thing called trail magic, that sometimes people just leave little gifts and stuff along the trail. Is that right?
Yes, and trail magic usually comes from trail angels, as we call them. You know, anything from someone stopping by where a road crossing is and leaving water bottles to full styrofoam coolers full of, you know, sodas on ice. That was really good trail magic. It was kind of in the middle of the woods. It was maybe a mile from a Forest Service road. Not really good water sources in the area, and you come around this corner, and here is a huge, almost twice the size of a Foot Locker, I guess the old Foot Locker kind of chest, full of food, toilet paper, sodas, and usually some of these pure Baptist churches just helping out hikers, and it goes such a long way. You know, there's some trail magic. A group of hikers from last year got together outside of Max Pass. This is when I got on for my sister's wedding. I took a couple of days off. And it was a reunion of 2012 hikers, a group of about 15 of them. And they had burgers. They brought grills. And they were all doing a reunion, but doing it in a way on the trail. So, you know, hikers passing through there had one of those huge bottles of Woodford Reserve whiskey. I mean, it was, coolers full of beer. So, I mean, that would be the ultimate trail magic right there. But, you know, anything from a Snickers to a water bottle, that's what the magic's all about. It's fun.
So now, have you met any very kind of weird people? Anything weird or freaky happened to you so far?
We had a hiker die on us when we were... again, the senses you get, you know, I posted something on Facebook the other day. It's like, you know, if you have a funny feeling, listen to it. You know, whatever that energy or source or God or whatever you want to call it. But we were in Harrisburg, Virginia, and I've been hiking with this guy named Waffles for a few days, and a really, really great guy, but also struggling maybe with, you know, maybe some kind of past addiction or current addiction. But I was supposed to stay in this, you know, I stayed in town that night, and the next night you know, he's like, hey, I'm gonna go get some food, we're gonna cook out at the pool. And you know, I was like, oh, it's time, you know, I was like, that sounds good, maybe I'll take another zero day and get some, you know, stuff. I was like, I'm throwing my bag in your room if you're staying here tonight. And threw my bag in his room, and I just, you know, for something, I don't know, I just ended up staring myself in the mirror, and like, what am I doing in this room in this kind of seedy hotel? And then, hey, I walked out of the room and looked out, and they were down at the pool grilling up, and hey, on the mountains in the background, I said, you know, that's where I need to be. And I took my bag, and I went down to the pool, and they're all like, where are you going? I said, I mean, I got to get out there. sometimes you just got that feeling or that, and, you know, so I said, you got a funny feeling, listen to it. I guess that's what I'm saying. But, yeah, he ended up, I guess, overdosing on something that night. So, you know, had I stayed, I would have been in a position around, you know, a pretty negative environment. And, you know, someone came up to me 2 days later on the trail and said, oh, did you hear what happened? This hiker died. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, waffles. And it really kind of struck me. And I was like, I was supposed to stay in his room that night. So,
wow.
You know, part of me is like, glad I got out. The other part is, you know, maybe if I was there, it was different. But, you know, you always go back and stuff like that. But, you know, there's some crazy things that happen out here, and sometimes you just...
So now, in order to stay safe, you know, it's good that you can remain in communication. How is your solar charger working out for you?
Good. It weighs a little bit. I've actually, I think about kind of maybe trading it out. There's some guys out here I see have, you know, about a charger about the size of your phone that you can plug into, you know, when you get to a town, and it holds a battery that will charge your iPhone, you know, 4 to 5 times in the woods. So just, you know, size-wise, and, you know, you don't have to continually charge it when you're out there, which is the solar panels. I don't know. So it's a little more work, but I don't know. I'm thinking about trading that out pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're almost out of time here, so tell everybody how they can keep up with your journey, because you're halfway through.
I mean,
it's a grand accomplishment.
If you check me out on Facebook, there should be a picture of me doing a little karate kick over some guy's head on McAfee's Knob. I've been posting a lot of pictures, hiking with these guys called the Warrior Hikers. I met a group, they're walking off the war, group of 13, you know, vets out here. I think one thing that the people out here I've met are, it's like complete family, and, you know, I'd say 90% of them are some of the best people I've ever met in my life, so, but you can check me out on Facebook. I'll be glad to accept friends, and, you know, I got a lot of pictures I'm posting of where I'm at, just some of the most beautiful pictures and views, but they really don't do justice to being there yourself. But
yeah. Well, Colin, I tell you, you are a hardcore, my friend, and we're going to have your Facebook page linked up again at the website.
You know, I'm going to continue to keep pushing forward.
All right. Well, you know, we're all rooting for you, man, and a lot of people are. So I know that you are going to have a big celebration at the end of this. You're halfway through. How many people can say they've hiked 1,000 miles? So I wish you nothing but good luck, and we'll touch base with you again soon, all right?
I will. I'll say hi to my mom and dad real quick. Love them. And, Josh, we'll have fun now. Be safe in that triangle. Don't go disappearing on us, all right?
All right, I'll try to stay put here best I can. There you go, folks.
All right, brother.
Colin Lee, right there in the middle of the Appalachian Trail. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the Minnesota Iceman on Speaking of Strange.
Today and tomorrow are yet to be said. The chances, the changes are all yours to make. The mold of your life is in your hands to break. The greatest adventure is there if you're bold. Let go. It's time you stop thinking and wasting the day. The man who's a dreamer and never takes leave, who thinks of a world that is just make-believe.
A lesson in life. You can go out there, friends. You can have your own adventure. You can cut that gap through the wilderness. That's what you want to do. Or you can go down here and hang out on an island and drink beer. That's cool too. You know, I actually was at a restaurant the other day here in Puerto Rico, and there was a guy singing, and he had that voice every time he sang. And Lauren and I looked at each other and said, man, that guy should sing The Greatest Adventure. And he was Puerto Rican, but, you know, he would do songs in English once in a while. And so I went up to him and I said, hey, man, have you ever seen The Hobbit? And he was like, oh, yeah, it's a great movie. And I was like, no, the original cartoon Hobbit. He says, no. And I was like, oh, you're kidding me. Because the guy looked like he might have been in that age range. And I said, do you know who Glenn Yarbrough is? No. I said, you ever heard the song, The Greatest Adventure? He had no idea what I was talking about. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. He just sit back down, Josh. He's like, he doesn't know what you're talking about.
Another drunk a-hole at that point, right?
Yes.
Didn't get it. Had no idea. So, oh, well. But, yes, we wish Colin Lee the best. We'll have his information linked up there at speakingofstrange.com, where you also find a live chat during the show and regular updates on weird news around the world and info on the haunted Asheville ghost tours. Best ghost tours in the world. Just look at TripAdvisor. See for yourself. Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours, hauntedasheville.com. You know, I did something, I don't know, kind of daring the other day, Forrest. I bought a machete, and I hacked open, for the first time, a coconut. And I just murdered this thing, and I lifted it up in the moonlight, and I drank deeply from it like a tribesman. And then I devoured its inner flesh like an animal and just tossed the empty hull away.
Did you feel like a man after that?
Absolutely. That kind of turned you on a little bit, didn't Shelley?
Oh, yes. Yes, the imagery here. Wow, I feel hot right now.
You should see her right now, Josh. Wow.
I bet. That's animal instincts.
Oh, my. Oh, wow.
Sorry, it's not a webcam show. Oh. Mm.
It should be.
Have you ever...
okay.
Okay now, Shelley. You obviously like coconuts.
yes, I do.
And have you ever opened one yourself?
No, I have not.
Forrest, have you ever cracked open a coconut?
I've not gone from the husk. I've gotten just the hard coconut and just cracked that part open.
Well, you know, you really need to get them when they're green, because by the time those things are brown, oh my gosh, it's really, really hard. I was chopping on it for a long time and finally said, okay, screw this one. And I got a green one, and I had it open in about, 30 seconds probably. But you got to be careful, though. You'll get killed by a coconut around here. It happens.
Right.
And that is one of the least honorable ways to die. To be killed by a coconut. But think of how instantaneous that would be. Just because some of these coconuts are 40 feet high up in the air. And these things are like a bowling ball. They're that heavy. And if that thing, imagine a bowling ball falling from 40 feet and hitting you in the head. Boom, that's it. You're toast. Well, okay. Now that we've gotten to touch base with Colin Lee and his greatest adventure, let's talk a little bit about this very fascinating story that ties into the greatest adventure that I had last year. Because, of course, last year, every year I have some big adventure. You know, this year I'm in Puerto Rico for months doing this thing. Last year I was filming the TV series Paranormal Paparazzi that aired on the Travel Channel. And was such a huge hit that they did not renew it for a second season because they felt that it should just be kept for their own pleasure. They were so greedy, they didn't want other people to get to see it again, right? You understand that, Forrest? Yeah. And so I was traveling around the country, and I actually had a run-in with a man who was going to play an even bigger role in history than I realized at the time. So let me explain. We'll go even further back in time. Years ago, I produced conferences at the Grove Park Inn Resort and Spa, which is a highfalutin five-star establishment there in Asheville, North Carolina. I've heard that the Grove Park Inn has been sold once again. Is that right, Forrest?
That's true. Omni Hotels bought it.
Wow. Because for so many years, you know, Grove Park was under the management of a man named Craig Madison, whom we knew quite well, and was a kind of set up where, you know, if he said this is the way it's going to be, well, that was the way it was going to be. One guy could make a decision, and you could get things done. But then the hotel, it got sold to a corporation where you have like a board of people, and it probably is a little slower to get things. And now another corporation has bought it. I don't even know what Grove Park Inn is like now. Have you guys been over there recently?
I drove through there yesterday. And mm-hmm. they've actually got a person at a little guardhouse right when you turn into the resort and ask you where you're going and what you're doing.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. And I said, what did you say?
I just said, I'm just cutting through. Like, okay.
Okay.
Did you really?
I did.
So, the Grove Park, you know, I had these big conferences, and you remember those days, Forrest, and people would come from all over the world, and we had a lot of fun, and they were very successful. And the very first year I did the conference, one of the first people that I called was Lauren Coleman, who is pretty much considered the premier cryptozoologist in the world. And if you don't know what a cryptozoologist is, these are people who study creatures that may or may not exist. Okay, so your obvious examples would be like Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, but it also includes the more academic study of creatures that are discovered every year, most of them insects. You also have those examples they champion, like the coelacanth, you know, a fish that was supposedly extinct for 30 million years and it was discovered, that kind of thing. So we invited Lauren Coleman to come speak. As a matter of fact, he spoke at two of our conferences, but I'm pretty sure the first time he came, one of the things that he presented that I thought was especially fascinating was the story of the Minnesota Iceman. And he had this slideshow, and it was literally a slideshow, which I doubt you see too many of those anymore, huh? When's the last time you saw a real slideshow? And so he goes through these pictures that show what looks like kind of a Neanderthal-esque man covered with hair, with blood around his nose and whatnot, sealed inside this block of ice. And because this thing is an ice, you can't get a very clear idea of what it looks like. Of course, there are sections that are closer to the surface where the ice is more transparent, and then sections that are farther back where it's more white, and so it creates this nice effect, but it looks really creepy. And in fact, if you've never seen any of these pictures, you can do a quick Google search for Minnesota Iceman, and you can see some of these images. And he was talking about the mystery of the Minnesota Iceman, which is something that he had also written about in many of his books, which I had in my collection. Here's the gist of the story, though. And actually, I have a breakdown of the history of the Minnesota Iceman. This figure, and again, I would say it looks more like a Neanderthal than anything. Wouldn't you, Forrest?
Yes.
Yeah. This figure first appeared in the U.S. and Canada in the 1960s. And it would pop up being displayed at shopping malls, state fairs, carnivals, and was promoted as the possible, quote, missing link between man and Neanderthals. Now, this creature, we'll say, is about 6 feet tall, again, very hairy with large hands and feet. The hair is dark brown, 3 to 4 inches long, a flattened nose. One of its arms appears to be broken. One of its eyes appears to be knocked out of its socket. And the story that accompanied this thing was that the first story was that this was some kind of a primitive human that was discovered in ice, okay? And there was this guy who was the promoter named Frank Hansen, who lived in Minnesota. And he said that this thing was owned by a millionaire. I think we're up on a break, aren't we, Forrest?
Yes.
Okay, let's go ahead and take the break. When we come back, I'll tell you more about the Minnesota Iceman, and then I'll give you my personal little sort of update on how that I came into contact with this story in an unexpected way last year. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. It is called Speaking of Strange. Listening to Speaking of Strange. We call it the show where the unusual becomes usual. And we're certainly talking about something unusual right now. The Minnesota Ice Man. Yes, the Minnesota Ice Man. This is, well, it's a controversial display. That's a very accurate way of stating what the Minnesota Iceman is. Marketed as the missing link between man and Neanderthals. Now, this is a guy, so to speak, a human-looking thing in a block of ice that has been displayed at shopping malls, state fairs, and carnivals going back to the 1960s. And the promoter and exhibitor, Frank Hansen, he said that this thing was discovered around Siberia and that he was acting as its caretaker for an absentee owner he described as a, quote, as an eccentric California millionaire, end quote. As he was touring around to carnivals and fairs, he was once reportedly detained by Canadian customs, no surprise there, who were concerned he was transporting a cadaver. And here's one of the most amazing things. In 1968, a couple of cryptozoologists who are highly regarded, Ivan Sanderson and Bernard Hovelmans, got the opportunity to go to Hansen's property there and spend about 3 days investigating the Minnesota Iceman, and they concluded that it was a genuine creature. Now, these are guys who are, were at the time especially respected by academia, and apparently they claimed that as they were studying this thing, at one point the ice had melted some, and a bit of the skin was exposed, and they claimed they found, quote, putrefaction, where some of the flesh had been exposed from the melted ice, end quote. And in 1969, Bernard Hoevelmans wrote an article in a Belgian scientific journal about the Iceman, suggesting it was a new species with Neanderthal affinities called Homo punguidus. And he theorized that, as opposed to this being some ancient find, that it was most likely shot and killed in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. After this article came out, I mean, people took Hoevelmans' word so seriously that the FBI was informed that this could be a human murder victim, and they looked into it, but they officially decided not to investigate, possibly because they thought it was a hoax. And, of course, you can imagine after that, when this thing appeared at carnivals, often it would say, you know, the Minnesota Iceman or the creature in the ice investigated by the FBI, you know, that sort of thing. Good P.T. Barnum material. So Ivan T. Sanderson, who was at the time the science editor for Argosy magazine, he wrote an article about the Iceman in the April 1969 issue with the headline, quote, "Is this the missing link between man and the apes?" End quote. So this really added a lot of, you know, good fodder for those who believe that this could be some kind of a real creature. And I must say that I imagine if I'd been living in the 60s and 70s and I'd read stuff that these guys had written along those lines, I would have taken it more seriously myself. But if things got a little bit messy, because once all this attention began to really focus on the Iceman, and the Smithsonian Institution took an interest in all that, suddenly the Iceman disappeared from public view. And Hansen there, the guy who owned it, well, the guy who was the promoter, he claimed that the California-based owner wanted to withdraw it. And then he later provided a another Iceman for exhibit, and people believe that that one was a latex model that was different from the original. And so now we start really getting into this, you know, vague territory about what's real and what's not. However, one of the guys who was working with the Smithsonian, he did a detailed investigation on his own, and he believed that this has been some type of a latex rubber and hair model the whole time. That from the very beginning, this there was only one Iceman, and that it they would reposition it and refreeze it between different appearances, and he was able to convince the Smithsonian that it was nothing more than a carnival exhibit. So then, of course, the thing disappeared again, and the last that I ever heard of the Minnesota Iceman reappearing was at a shopping mall somewhere around New York or New Jersey around 1980. And then after that, gone. So here you have, you know, what began as this sort of obscure display popping up in, you know, weird and almost unpredictable places for limited periods of time. And then you have these esteemed researchers claiming that, no, this is real. You know, this is a flesh and blood creature. And then that one disappearing, and they claim that, well, now there's a substitution that's been made that some people say is fake, but then that one disappeared. And then you have people who are wondering, well, was there ever a real Minnesota Iceman that was the predecessor of the fake one, or has this always been a fake? And either way, what the heck happened to this thing? It looked like, regardless, that it had finally vanished. And that gave it a real air of mystery that this thing was gone, and it seemed like it was gone for good. And when you hear people like Lauren Coleman talking about it, and you see these pictures, I mean, I don't know what pictures that you know, those of you who have researched this have seen, but I've seen some pictures that make you think, oh, this does look pretty darn good. But then again, you always have to be suspicious any time a creature is presented under a layer of ice. Now, Forrest, I know you've seen these pictures, and I know that you showed some pictures to Shelley during the break.
Right.
So, Shelley, Forrest, did you show her the pictures in color?
Did you see the color pictures?
I think there's a
color picture, but it's real dark.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. I did not see the good pictures. I didn't see the ones that looked real. I saw the pictures that looked like, you know, a guy in a gorilla suit with, you know,
this. Okay, well, I just went to Google, and I just typed in Minnesota Iceman, and, oh, I bet I know what you saw, Shelley. Okay, you saw this black and white one.
No, okay.
That's not the one I'm talking about. Okay, if you, for those of you who are listening at home, and I'll post this also at speakingofstrange.com, if you type in Minnesota Iceman in Google and hit search, and then it brings up, you know, your results, and you hit images. The second one over is a close-up of the face. That's the one that you want to look at. It's color. And because I see the one that you were looking at, Shelley, it just, you're right, it looks like some dude in a monkey suit. That is totally not it. No, it's the close-up of the face in color. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. Here's how I would describe this. It looks, again, like a Neanderthal's face with a heavy brow and a real heavy chin. The mouth is slightly agape, so you can see some large, chunky teeth. The eyes appear to be squinty, but it does look like one of the eyes might be knocked a bit out of socket. There's dark, bushy hair on the chin. There's dark hair on the head. Kind of kinky hair on the chin. And there's ice all around, but the face is rather visible, but there's a white layer of thicker ice over the forehead. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what sort of the breaking news is. Because guess what, folks? The Minnesota Iceman has reappeared. He's back, and I have a connection to this story. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
Another story, something to get off my chest. My life is kind of boring. Need something that I can confess. Till on my sleeves I stain red. From all the truth that I've said. Come by it honestly, I swear. Thought you saw me weak, no. I've been on the brink, so tell me what you want to hear. We got this far.
final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. Next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we discuss some of the more outrageous and controversial topics, the more sordid and seedy stuff, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. And, boy, the stack of stuff that we have this week, I don't know what has happened over the past 7 days, but it's going to be tricky to make it through all of this stuff. But, okay, back to the Minnesota Iceman. Now, last year, I did this TV series with the Travel Channel called Paranormal Paparazzi. And I was one of the main cast members. I was on every episode, and I got to travel around the country as a reporter on camera, you know, collecting all kinds of stories and things. And I did a lot of research in Texas. There were several stories that I covered in Texas. And one of the stories I did that did not make the cut, that did not make it to air, was in Austin, Texas, which I'd never been to Austin before, and Austin is a really, really cool place. I mean, you know, my wife is from Texas, and I've at this point, I've been all over Texas, and if I were to move to Texas, the only places I would actually consider living would be San Antonio or Austin. And Austin actually is a lot like Asheville, North Carolina, very, very kind of, you know, hip, and there's a lot of artistry and a lot of musicians and whatnot, and right in the middle of their main strip where you find all the late-night bars is this place called the Museum of the Weird, and the man who created and owns the place is named Steve Busti. And Steve's a real nice guy. He's obviously, you know, as eccentric as you would hope. He usually wears a little cap, and he's a very charming guy and a good promoter and a man who really loves the idea of the P.T. Barnum sideshow, freak show type stuff. And he's done a better job of keeping that tradition alive than anybody else that I've met in my travels around the U.S. And so you go to the Museum of the Weird, and you walk through, and you see it all. You know, you see the Fiji mermaids and the two-headed cows and, you know, all the really classic traditional stuff. And he and his staff were, they went on camera, and they did great interviews, and they have a freak show that they do, and it was a lot of fun. So I was disappointed that the producers and editors did not use it for the program. Well, you can imagine my surprise when here I was on the internet researching, you know, content, and I see that the Minnesota Iceman has resurfaced and has been purchased. I said, "What? How did I not know it was for sale?" So the Minnesota Iceman has been in storage all these years and has now been purchased for $21,000 by Mr. Steve Busti of the Museum of the Weird in Austin, Texas. And I said, "You got to be kidding me. The guy that I hung out with for 2 days last year just bought the Minnesota Iceman." And as a matter of fact, to make things even weirder, the process of having the Iceman shipped from Minnesota down to Austin was documented on the A&E show Shipping Wars, which aired like a week or two ago. And I actually saw the episode of Shipping Wars where they were, you know, bringing this thing down. So this month is the big debut where he's having a big party and they're pulling back the curtain and revealing the Minnesota Iceman. Now, I emailed Steve, and I said, "I want to get you on Speaking of Strange and talk about this." And we're trying to work that out. I hope that we can. He's obviously slammed right now. Everybody on the planet wants to interview him right now. Because I want to know how he knows this is the original Minnesota Iceman and how that, you know, he explains from his point of view, as the owner of this thing now, what the true history of this thing is. So if I were in the States, I would be probably in a car driving to Austin, Texas, to see the Minnesota Iceman, something that seemed impossible. Now, is it probably a fake? Of course it's probably a fake, because if this thing were a dead human being, then it would, there would probably be legal repercussions. But that doesn't mean there might not be some real flesh on it, because, you know, they say it stinks when it begins to melt. So go do your own search, museumoftheweird.com, museumoftheweird.com. And if any of you get to go check out the Minnesota Iceman, email me, and I'll bring you on this show, and I will talk to you about what it was like to go see the Minnesota Iceman. You can email me through speakingofstrange.com. When we come back, it will be the Dark 30 Hour. I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.